Hey everyone, you're tuning into a new episode of Talk Back with C.E. Moore. This time around, fiction editor Melissa Willis joins me on the line as we sit down and talk with Robin Parrish about his newest young adult novel, Corridor.
Last time we talked about Vigilante, and now a lot of things have changed for you, and we'll talk all about that. But your newest book, Corridor, has just come out, and you've come out with it in a pretty interesting way, and we'll hit on that a little bit here. But talk a little bit about the story. What is Corridor all about? For someone who has never heard of this book, kind of give a little brief synopsis without ruining the story for everyone.
Okay. Well, synopsis is the story of a young boy who's about to turn 17, and he kind of mysteriously, inexplicably wakes up inside a foreign place, and he has no idea how he got there or why or what's going on. And he comes to learn that this place is just staggeringly huge. It's a very long, 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 long structure. It's miles long, and it's called the Corridor, and it's made up of these massive rooms. And each room is designed almost to test him in some way, physically, mentally, emotionally, whatever. And as he goes along, he hears a voice inside of his head, and it's a young girl who's about his same age, probably, that's one of the things you'll learn as you go along, and she's kind of there to guide him and to help him, but at the same time, he kind of wonders, you know, is she really on my side? Could she be responsible for all this? What's really going on here? Why am I here? Why do I have to do this? And he goes through quite a lot. But the thrust of the story is figuring out what the corridor is, who made it, why, where it's located, and why Troy, the main character, was brought there.
Okay.
Now, this book is different for you in several ways. This is the first book that you've done that's been kind of published in a non-conventional method, and it's also your first young adult novel. Tell us about some of the challenges you faced going the non-conventional route, and as far as the book is concerned, and then what kind of differences can the long-term readers or your long-time readers expect to see?
The differences for me is that it was actually a much simpler process. I used a new publisher for this one called Stonehouse Inc., and they specialize in ebooks, and they also do printed books as well. They can do the whole package. They even do audiobooks. But they tend to start everything with an ebook. And what intrigued me about them is that they have a really, really smart business model that's very different than the traditional publisher. It's like they took a big step back and looked at the big picture and saw that everything had been done a certain way for so long, and nobody in that system had ever thought, maybe we should update this. Maybe we should make some changes because the world is changing. You know, we have ebooks now, and we have different, so many different authors. People can self-publish and all these things with much greater ease than they could before. So this publisher really gets that. And, the way that the authors are paid is different. It's just a completely different method. And it intrigued me a lot because I saw this as a way to get into young adult, because that's something I wanted to do for a long time. And I had this story, I had this, idea of this guy who wakes up in this crazy huge, big structure. And when the guy from Stonehouse first approached me, I just, I started adding up the different things in my head, and I realized, I have this story. It's kind of short, it would definitely be shorter than my other books. It would work with a young character, a teenager, so it would work great as a young adult, and I could sell it as an ebook, and it just kind of snowballed. It was all of these things that killed so many birds with one stone, that I wanted to do, and so I did it. Worked with an editor there, worked with the publisher. His name is Aaron Patterson. He's a author as well, very good one, and it's been fantastic. I mean, they've been nothing but great. They've been very patient with me and very, very helpful. And I've learned a lot working with them. And I can't wait to do it again.
Well, you said that you've been wanting to do young adult for a while. What about that genre kind of draws you to it?
Well, a lot of things. It's become very hot in recent years. I won't deny that there is definitely a commercial appeal that that appeals to me. It's very, very hot. You've got Harry Potter, you've got The Hunger Games, you've got, you know, Ugh Vomit, the Twilight series. You've got
what?
All
you
these
didn't
different...
like Twilight? Come on.
Oh gosh,
so great.
Dude.
I love their story.
Yeah, right. Like you did. Give me a break. I know you. Oh, give me a break. So, you know, what appeals to me about it from a storytelling point of view is that it's a place where anything can happen. If you look on the store shelves at the young adult section, you see every different genre imaginable, but a lot of science fiction, fantasy, and a lot of them are really big, crazy, outside-the-box ideas. And it seemed like there's this huge explosion in creativity going on in young adult right now. And I wanted to be a part of that. You know, I love outside-the-box ideas. I love things that people don't expect and going places and charting new courses and that sort of thing. And it felt like the right fit for me. And you know, from a selfish point of view, it's a place where books are selling like hotcakes. And it's also a place that Hollywood has grown exceptionally interested in of late and are drawing a lot of stories from. So it touched on a lot of good things for me.
I think one of the things that appeals to me most about young adult fiction is, and there's plenty of exposition in them, and depending on what the book is, I mean, every book is different, but you get to the action pretty quickly in young adult fiction, whereas in adult fiction, you don't always have that. However, that's not necessarily the case with you. I remember going all the way back to your first novel, Relentless. You're just kind of like the character's like, you know, what the heck is going on? You know, he gets off the bus, he sees himself across the street. It's like, what is going on?
Yeah,
what?
I despise stories where it's like 20 chapters before the story actually begins.
Right.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of time for reading myself, so if they don't grab me from the first page, I don't have time to keep going.
Right,
that's more of a taste issue, but I think you're right that it does kind of make me particularly suited for young adult.
Yeah, you definitely do, and you have a penchant for dropping characters into a what the heck is going on type of situation. How do you feel you're influenced by, like, there are movies that do this that are pretty popular, like Saw, like the dudes wake up, they're chained to the floor. Like,
yeah, and you know,
how do we get here?
That was one thing that occurred to me very early on. You know, you've got this big structure. You've got this guy who's inexplicably plopped down in this place, and he wants to escape, and he's got all of these challenges to get through. And I thought, oh, crud, you know, I have got to be extremely careful about this to not go down that road towards horror and Saw and, you know, torture porn and all of that. And that was something I was mindful of writing the whole thing. I was just like, I can't let this get so dark that it becomes, you know, that kind of scary or that kind of disgusting kind of thing, because that's
right.
So not at all the kind of story I think of it as.
Well, there was another movie that I was kind of getting at in terms of the sci-fi aspect, and there was a little bit of the torture porn part of it, but there was a film called Cube that came out where, you know, all these people wake up. So it was more than two people, but it was a bunch of people woke up, they had to learn how to trust each other, and they had to get from room to room doing these puzzles. And so that was immediately what I was drawn. That's why I was drawn into the story initially, because I remember loving Cube. I don't know if you've ever seen it or if this has influenced you.
I haven't, but I'm definitely familiar with it. I mean, I know what.
Yeah.
I've never seen it all the way through, but I know what happens, and yeah, I remember it well.
Okay, so what appeals to you? I mean, yeah, you said, you know, you don't have a lot of time to read, so you want to be drawn in. But what appeals to you about the what the heck is going on type of situation? Because there are other ways to get action started.
Sure.
You seem to drop characters into these situations that the readers are like, yeah, I want to know what's going on. So, you're figuring it out as the main character is. What appeals to you about those kind of situations?
Calvin, I love this question. Nobody's ever asked me this before. This is a good one. The whole thing really appeals to me because there's something about that situation where the reader has no idea what's going on, but it's exciting and you want to know what's going on. There's something about that just creates an instant hook that draws people in. It's just, oh, what's going on? I've got to read this.
Right.
What's going on? And there's something about that story structure that definitely causes that hook to form a lot earlier in the story than it might otherwise. There are probably plenty of ways to do that. This is one that I have a particular affinity for. You're right. I'm not sure I can put it into words other than that, man. I really like that structure. There's something about that sense of discovery. You go along, you peel the layers of the onion back, and you know, I've talked before. I don't know if I think I've talked with you guys about it. I don't know. I've done a lot of interviews, but I love those kinds of stories where, you know, you ask the big questions. And a lot of times those big questions are born out of these crazy situations. And for me, what I try to do is I take very common situations and kind of put them into an allegorical sense and magnify them to a crazy degree. I mean, the Dominion Trilogy was a lot about what I went through when my dad died. And it felt like, you know, the rug had just been pulled out from under my whole life. And I took a lot of those feelings and infused them into that main character and just put them on this humongous, insane, grand scale so that I could really magnify them and zero in on them and depict them more strongly. So there's something I just love about asking those big questions. And you know, I've said before also, I really think you have to have a good answer when you ask a big question like that. When you start off a story and the basis for the story is figuring out what's going on. That's the hook for the reader. You've got to find out what's going on. There's also action. There's also interesting characters and emotion and development, all these things. But right off the bat, you ask that big question. And you have to put your faith in the author that question is going to have a good answer.
Now, when you're writing that story, though, when you're writing that story, you just said, you know, I try to come up with a good answer. When you sit down, you say, here's a big question I'm asking. Do you have the big answer ready to go from the get-go?
Absolutely.
Or okay,
absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, I don't sit down and write a single word until I have an outline and I know every major beat of the story. And the ending is crucial. I mean, I hate stories so much. When you go on this big journey and there's all these big promises and you feel like you're going to get to something really awesome, you know, at the end, and then it's like the air goes out of the balloon and the author just kind of gives up because they can't answer all those questions, and turned out the questions were more interesting than the answer. And that just drives me crazy, man. I hate that. So, you know, that's totally something that I strive towards.
And that's
absolutely
how I felt about Lost. That's how I felt about Lost.
Yeah, a lot of people felt that
opinion
way about Lost. I did. I was okay with the way it ended because I liked the emotional content. But, you know, looking back on it after more time, I do have things that it's not so much for me about the unanswered questions as places that I wish they had gone. That I wish there had been more depth to the mysteries of the island, because when those mysteries were introduced, they were introduced as these big, huge, earth-shattering things, and then when the mysteries were revealed, they tended to be little tiny things that just, you know, revolved around somebody's relationship with somebody else. And, you know, that's valid, but it felt to me like the buildup didn't match the payoff.
Right. The payoff.
And that's something else that I'm always trying to be conscious of when I write. I want those to totally match up.
Speaking of which, and we're going to continue with our regularly scheduled interview, I do have another question in terms of the J.J. Abrams world. Are you ready for Alcatraz tonight?
Oh, dude, can't wait. I'm so in. I cannot wait. I'm not, you know, holding my breath that it's going to be the next Lost or anything. I don't know that it has that kind of potential, because it seems like it's a really geeked up sort of procedural, because they're going to be chasing a new villain every week, you know, kind of a thing. But I think just having the mythology elements in there and all of that is what excites me most about it. So I want to see what happens. I want to see how it develops. I want to see if they're able to hold my attention, frankly.
Okay, cool.
Well, moving back to Corridor again.
Sorry.
I watch virtually. I mean, I do know what Alcatraz is because I watch football. Otherwise, I wouldn't even have a clue what Alcatraz is. No, I mean, I'm so out of TV. So when y'all,
but this is a chance for you to get on board, and this interview won't play until February. So you people listening to it, the show's already premiered, but the show is about to premiere tonight, so this is a place for you to just jump on board with everybody else.
I see. Okay, well, Corridor.
Was there a question in there?
All right. Well, you know, jumping a little bit from what Calvin was talking about, you know, the dropping them into the middle of nowhere. You do some other things that are a little different from other authors, and one of them is, like with Corridor, it takes place in a single location. Mm-hmm. You know, it's basically a single storyline, and in this case, it's limited to two characters, pretty much mm-hmm. it. But the story still remains interesting. Do you find it limiting to have, you know, just a small spot, two characters? Do you find mm-hmm. that limiting at all? And what do you do to make sure that the story does remain intriguing so that, you know, people aren't wanting to move on to something new and different?
Yeah, I mean, you just described the entire challenge of this whole book, of writing it, because, you know, I designed it because that was what suited the story, just having these two characters in this one location. I didn't sit down and say, okay, I'm just going to tell a story now with two characters in it. Mm-hmm. It just has two characters because that's what the story calls for. You know, I didn't intentionally limit myself that way, but it, you know, it very much can be a crutch that writers fall back on, is that anytime you find yourself written into a corner, you can just introduce a new character and say, okay, here's somebody that can help, you know, change things and change somebody's mind and turn things this way and do that. And, you know, I couldn't do that with this at all. And yeah, absolutely. That was a big challenge, but you know, I like a challenge. I love writing anything that's going to stretch me and hopefully improve my writing. You know, let me try different kinds of genres, different kinds of things. You know, the fact that it does happen in one place with just these two characters, I knew from the beginning that it was going to be shorter because of that. And I was okay with that. That was kind of what I was after to start with, you know, for a young adult book. But absolutely, it was a huge, huge challenge. And, you know, one of the biggest challenges for me was the location, because so many of my other books, you know, in the past, I've been able to go to real world locations and, you know, take you on this journey throughout the world and places that you've heard of and things like that. And, you know, resort to Google Maps and look up these real, you know, real world details and describe these places. And that's been really helpful, frankly, that, you know, because you can go, you can look at, you know, I always go back to Offworld for this, because looking at the route between Florida and Houston that they took in that book actually inspired a lot of the things that happened in that book. I found a lighthouse, and I found a stadium, and I found all of these things that just played right into what I wanted to do. I couldn't do any of that with this one. There was really no research that I did for this book, and that's the first time I've ever had no research for. But I mean, I might have looked up a medical condition once or twice or something like that, but there was nothing like that I could fall back on. So in a way, this was kind of the hardest one to write that I've done so far, because every single bit of it had to come straight out of my imagination. Hmm. And I had nothing else to look to. There was no, you know, no inspiration, no roadmap, no nothing. So that definitely sets this one apart, I think.
You like making life hard on yourself? I mean, you ask a big question, drop them in the middle of nowhere, then make it confining. You have to use your total imagination. You like kind of get pleasure out of making this difficult for yourself?
It's not about making it difficult for myself. It's about stretching myself. It's about making myself try new things. Do things instead of just falling back on the same story structure that I've done in the past. I don't want to name any names, but I know lots of authors, both personally and people I've never talked to in my life, that write the same book over and over and over again and are very successful at it. And that just frustrates the heck out of me, because it feels like they're cheating a little bit, frankly. You know, they're getting away with doing the same thing again and again and again. From a personal perspective, as the writer, I would be so bored doing that. I mean, I could do it. I could do it easily. I could tell another Dominion trilogy. It's just, that's basically the classic hero's journey, with some twists and turns and changes thrown in that I did for fun. And I could easily do that again. And I may come up with another twist on that, but it would be something wildly different and something, you know, that you would not compare to the Dominion trilogy at all, because that's just who I am as a writer, I guess. I want to try different things. I want to do different things. I don't want to be pigeonholed.
For what it's worth, those formulaic books only work for so long for a reader, I think, and then, or at least for me. I mean, once I, whenever I can get to a point with an author where I can read the first couple of chapters and make really good guesses about what's going to come to the end, then that's pretty much my stopping point. I've got too many inventive novels that I can read to waste my time the same one over and over again. And so I know that authors will sell millions. Those that are successful at it can sell millions with those formulaic books, but there's a limit to them.
There is. And you know, maybe I'm limiting myself by not doing that financially. Maybe I could be more successful if I would just tell one story after another that was very similar. I don't know, but I don't think I could do it and keep my sanity.
We're trying to keep things to about 30 minutes this time around, so we've got about another 5 minutes. I have another question that I wanted to ask. And you touched on this a little bit online, and then a myth works novel. So it says Robin Parrish, Corridor, a myth works novel. And I know that you explained this online, and I loved how you explained it. Talk a little bit about myth works, because you're not saying myth works is a series. You're saying
Exactly. It's a brand name. That's how I think of it. You know, you look at the most prominent brands in the world, like Apple and Coke and Nike, and you hear those words and instantly you know what they are. You know what to expect from them. You know what kind of product you're going to get. You know what it's going to look like, feel like, how you're going to use it. There's instant identification. And I got to thinking about that, and I really liked the idea of doing that with what I write. You know, other writers have done it. Most of the time, it's like the main character's name, and they use that character in a lot of their books. You might see, you know, on the cover of a James Patterson novel, you might see an Alex Cross novel. Mm-hmm. Or on the cover of Tom Clancy, you might see a Jack Ryan novel. And those are kind of their brands. And you know, that works for them. That's great. For me, I didn't want to tie it together with the same character or even the same continuity, you know, the same universe, whatever you want to call it. For me, I wanted to tie it together kind of thematically and structurally. And, you know, mythologies are something that I am very, very compelled by and interested in. And looking back on all of the stuff that I've done before, I think every single one of them has had their own mythology. And when I use the word mythology, I'm not talking about, you know, the ancient belief system sense of the phrase. I'm talking about sort of a invented history, if you will, gotcha, that comes built into these stories. And looking ahead at all of the ideas, I mean, I went through my many notebooks that have ideas and things, and I couldn't find a single one that wasn't built on some kind of invented history like this. And something about that just really, really appeals to me, that whole idea of this is a living, breathing world where things have happened before the story even starts, and there's this big history, and you're seeing a part of it. And I think one of the reasons that appeals to me is because it's very reflective of the world that we live in. We all live in a world that has its own history, and we're all kind of based on, all of our lives are based on what came before. So it's just kind of a way of adding authenticity to a story, and I just like the idea of weaving all of these past events into a story. I think it really deepens it. But in this sense, I chose this because, you know, mythologies are kind of what I do. It's sort of a trademark for me, I think. I didn't realize it at first when I started writing, but, you know, as I got more into it, you know, I love Lost. I love Battlestar Galactica. I love video games like Myst. Movies like The Matrix and Lord of the Rings, and all of these things, what ties them together is that they all have their own mythology. And I realized that that's what I want to do. That's what I want my books to be known for. So I wanted to have a name right there on the cover, a brand name, so that when people see that, they instantly know what kind of story they're going to get. And, you know, I'm not saying it's going to be on every single one of my books. I may come up with an idea someday that doesn't rely on that. but for the foreseeable future, it definitely does. And people have been asking me, what is this MythWorks? Is it a series? Is it an imprint? You know, what is it? It's not any of those things. It doesn't mean that they're all going to share something story-wise. It just means that they all basically come from me. It's just a way of branding the books.
Okay. That's fair.
So what's next for you?
Well, right now next is this collaborative project I'm doing with six other authors called 7 Hours. And
I saw a little bit about that online. You guys doing
it's this really unique idea. Author friend of mine, James Andrew Wilson, came up with the idea. It's a collection of 7 novellas, and each of them is thematically similar, deals with a similar subject matter, and features the same character popping up through all 7. And it's just sort of a character that kind of pops in and out. It's not, the stories aren't necessarily about him. And I can't give too much away. We've all agreed not to spill, you know, any of the big secrets or anything yet. But the idea is that they're all going to be collected into a single volume and sold as an ebook together. And Tyndale House is publishing it. As far as I know, I don't want to speak out of turn here, but my understanding is that mine will be the last one in the collection. It'll be at the back of the book, and that's kind of by design. It was something that James and I talked about, and the idea that I had for what I wanted to do for my story kind of served as a good capper on the whole thing. So I think it's coming out in summer. I haven't heard an actual release date. I could be wrong on that. It could be sooner. You'll probably want to look that up at Tyndale House, and don't quote me on that. It's going to be super exciting, and I love all of the people who are doing it. They're all, I've seen their stories, and it's some really, really fantastic original work. And the one that I've done is really, really, I mean, I know I say this all the time because we just had this whole conversation about me always doing different stuff, but this one is really, really different than anything I've done before. I mean, it's a whole different genre of writing, and it was fun. It was fun stretching myself that way a lot. I really, really liked it.
Cool.
Well, there's some good authors on that project, too. In fact,
there are.
Mike Losa and Ronnie Kendig. Mm-hmm. Who else is on there? I'm drawing a blank on that.
Renee Gutteridge, Travis Thrasher. Did you say him?
Yeah.
Mike Deloso. James is on there. And who's the, let me see. Hang on. I'm at my computer. I can look it up. I should know this by heart by now, and I apologize to my office friends
some
for not knowing
you
it.
You're not even a fan of your own writing.
Seriously.
Wow.
Okay, it's me, it's Michael Thrasher, Michael Deloso, Travis Thrasher, Ronnie Kendig, Tom Pollock, and Renee Gutteridge.
Okay,
cool.
I've read I think every one of them, but Renee, I haven't read any of her books. But
she's a hoot. You should interview her sometime. I had never talked to her or met her or anything before this, but just from the emails and conversations that we've all had, she's very witty. She comes out with these crazy lines, and I'm always telling her, I'm going to use these lines someday in my book. She's hilarious. She's just got this really dry wit that she's just very off the cuff. I love her. She's awesome.
We'll definitely have to put her on our list of people to talk to. But last question again, the one we normally finish off with is, we live in a world of the internet, and, even more so now your latest book is an ebook, so times are changing. But where can people find out more about you, what you're doing? I know you have your own blog. I know that you blog elsewhere. Where can people find out more about Robin Parrish and what you're doing?
Lord, I'm all over the place, man. RobinParrish.com would be your starting point. I'm on Facebook and Twitter and all those wonderful social places. You can find links to all those right there on my front page. Professionally, I write for a website called ForeverGeek.com. We just have a lot of fun talking about pop culture and movies and video games and stuff like that. I write for another site called Apple Gazette, where it's all about Apple products. I'm the main writer there. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. I think that's it for right now. I also wanted to point out before we go that for those who want to read Corridor and don't have an e-reader, it is coming in print as well. It will be available. My understanding, the last thing I was told, is that it'll be around the end of this month. You will be able to order it in print.
All right, sweet. Well, Robin, again, always a pleasure to catch up with you and talk about what you're doing and follow your career. I love this new direction that you're going in. And
thanks
so much for taking time to answer our questions.
Thanks. I appreciate you asking them. You had some really good ones.
Thanks. You have a great afternoon,
really
bro.
Think it out. I appreciate it. All right, you too.
Talk to you later.
Bye. Bye-bye.